You are listening to the Pinstripe Talk Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Pinstripe Talk Podcast, powered to you all by Delahanty Media. I'm your host, Nick Delahanty. If you're new to our channel, you're new to our show, we welcome you aboard. If you're a returning listener or a viewer, we thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule to talk some Yankees baseball with us. Now, you can always follow us on social media by hitting us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you name it. Our show is there available for you. On Facebook, search up Pinstripe Talk Podcast. On Twitter, at Pinstripe Talk ND. And on Instagram, under Delahanty Media. Our show is available on all podcasting platforms. Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, and review the show on there. Also on Spotify. And our new feature on YouTube. If you're watching our video stream, hit that little red button to subscribe to our channel and get all the latest news and updates regarding our brand and our show. Now, today's episode, we're going to talk about the non-tender deadline. And it was this past week. Teams had to make some pretty hectic decisions, some pretty tough decisions in regards to their 2021 teams. They had to decide if they wanted to tender contracts to some of their somewhat key players from a year ago. And the Yankees made a couple of roster moves. We're going to talk about them as a whole and look ahead to the team's arbitration numbers. Now, if you're wondering what the non-tender deadline is, essentially, teams had up until the deadline, which was, again, this past week, to tender a contract to their players from last year. Now, if a player was on the 40-man roster with fewer than 6 years of big league experience, they have to be tendered contracts in the offseason in order for the team to keep them. And then you go through whether the arbitration process, if the player is eligible, or you come to agreement on terms prior to that. So there are a couple of wrinkles in there. Now, if a team decides to not tender a contract to a player, that player immediately becomes a free agent and can test their luck in other organizations or try to come up with a deal with that same team, maybe for a lower price or things like that. What you're going to see in this market is teams did not want to pay the price on some of these guys that are available because of the current market. Let's remember the COVID-19 virus hit everybody hard. So we're at that point in time where teams are really looking to save budget and really can't afford to pay some of these guys, especially if their salary increase doesn't really match the production that they're getting. So teams, we thought there was going to be a lot more non-tenders. It looks like there's not as many as we thought there were going to be. A little bit of an increase from a year ago, but still not drastic enough to the point where it's very shocking. Now, let's start talking about the Yankees as a whole. And the Yankees made a couple of moves on the deadline of the non-tender deadline. First and foremost, they came to an agreement on a one-year, $1 million contract with Luis Sessa. Sessa, entering his age 29-year-old season, has been a middle reliever or long reliever for this Yankee team. And if you watch the Yankees hot stove over the past couple of weeks, you would have heard Buck Showalter, who's now an analyst with the team, talk about how reliable Sessa could be. And for $1 million, keeping him around makes a lot of sense. Obviously, he has no options left. The Yankees view him as a big league arm, but they see him as a piece that can help fill out the bullpen. They're probably not going to rely on him to pitch the eighth or ninth inning anytime soon, but he's a guy who could come in the middle of the game and maybe get you three outs, maybe even go an extended amount of time and keep you in a ball game, or eat up innings to avoid having to use your key guys in situations that you really don't want to necessarily use them in. As you can see on the screen, his stats were pretty solid over 16 appearances. Got off to a slow start this year due to COVID-19. Obviously, he was impacted by it, but still made 16 appearances, allowed only 8 runs in 21 and two-thirds innings of work. So to keep Sessa around definitely makes a lot of sense for this team moving forward. And I think that if you're the Yankees, you really got to just, you know, sit back and really take advantage of that and look into the situation and say, you know, for $1 million, we could definitely. The next guy we have to talk about is Ben Heller, who the Yankees came to an agreement on a one-year, $880,000 deal for the 2021 season. And keeping Heller around is kind of a similar situation as Luis Sessa. Now, over the last two seasons, Heller has only appeared in 12 total games. You have to remember, in 2018, he did miss the entire season due to Tommy John surgery. But this is a guy that the Yankees still have high hopes for. They think he could be a quality reliever for them. Obviously, with a ton of young pitching depth, keeping Heller around will allow him to compete for a job. And for that price, it makes a lot of sense to keep him around. So the Yankees make the decision to find an agreement with Heller before, you know, the non-tender deadline and decide that he's a piece that can impact the 2021 club. One guy that the Yankees did decide for at least the time being to part ways with is Jonathan Holder. Holder, coming off a 2020 season, which was pretty rough for him, almost a 5 ERA over 18 appearances. Holder had a really good 2018 season. And, you know, you're looking at the numbers as a whole, and he was actually a very valuable reliever for this team. 60 appearances, 3.14 ERA over 66 innings pitched during that season. Struck out 60 batters, opposed to only 19 walks. So had a really strong year. And after that, you have to look at him and say, you know, he's a guy that might take that next step and be a bigger piece in the Yankee bullpen. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened. The last 2 years, he's been faced with struggles. Yeah, the wins and loss record, he's 8-2 over that span. But the ERA is very high. And although he has shown flashes of being good and being a quality reliever on this team, unfortunately, it just hasn't clicked on the consistency level. Holder was projected to make $1 million in arbitration. If he got there, the Yankees decided it wasn't in their best interest to tender him a deal. Maybe they try to bring him back on their terms, maybe try to get him at a cheaper price and let him compete for a spot in that bullpen. But if you're looking at this as a whole, it appears that the Yankees are ready to move on from Jonathan Holder. Now that we took a look at three roster moves that the Yankees made prior to the non-tender deadline, it's important to kind of look ahead toward arbitration, which will be a big factor in the Yankees' offseason plans. The Yankees currently have 8 players that are scheduled to hit arbitration, and I'm sure that the organization would love to come to agreements with each and every player instead of going to the arbitration process. And what we're going to do is kind of look at some projections and how it may affect the Yankees' offseason plans moving forward. If you're interested in finding out more information regarding the arbitration process and possible projections, check out MLBTradeRumors.com for all the latest breakdowns and projections for all Major League Baseball teams. This year was a little different given the 60-game schedule, so MLB Trade Rumors created 3 methods that they are going to create projected salaries for each player that's arbitration eligible. Method 1 is directly about the 60-game season. Method 2 kind of looks ahead if the season was 162-game slate. As an example, one home run would be the equivalent of 2.7 in this method. And method 3 is for non-first-time eligibles that find the raise they'd get in a 162-game season. And then it's a 37% raise off of that. So let's take a look at the Yankees' numbers that they came up with. And as you can see in Method B, the totals are a little bit higher, especially for guys like Luke Voit and Gio Urshela. Voit, the Major League home run leader this year, had a monster season. It's expected that if it was a 162-game season, the numbers are a little bloated, especially given their formula that they're working with. And same for Gio Urshela, coming off a very good year, a year in which he was a Gold Glove Award finalist. So you see that their numbers in Method B are a little bit more staggered than Method A and Method C. You also see guys like Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez getting a little bit more of a significant raise in Method B. So if you look at the totals, and at the bottom of the screen you can see the actual total for each projection, you would assume that the Yankees would love to have Method A, but Method B is what seems to be the hot trend in regards to what people are looking at. Let's use that as the example because it is the biggest number that we are looking at. If that is the actual number that the Yankees have spent on the arbitration players, and it would be $42.2 million, along with the payroll that is already committed to the team heading into 2021, the Yankees would be looking at approximately $172 million that is committed to next year's squad. And that would leave them about $38 million to work with, given the $210 million tax, luxury tax that they're expecting. So for the Yankees, obviously, you would love to see Method A. And if you're looking at these numbers, obviously, you may get some steals with some of these players. Does Luke Voit's number really jump up to $7.9 million after last season, according to Spotrac? He only made $634,000. And a guy like Gio Urshela made just under $2.5 million in 2020. Does he really take that big of a jump? Obviously, it could happen. We've seen crazier things go along. But if you're the Yankees and you're trying to stay under that luxury tax, you're trying to save money in any which way. And one way that they can do that is by avoiding actually going to arbitration. sitting down with these players and trying to come up with a solution that fits both parties before it gets to arbitration. Because let's be honest, the arbitration process does get a little ugly, and the Yankees definitely don't want to go down that road. That's something that I think that they've learned in the past. It doesn't really benefit to go into those talks. If you remember, Dellin Betances had a really bad experience with the overall arbitration process. The Yankees basically ripped him in his arbitration hearing, according to sources, and they were not very friendly in regards to what Betances brought to the table. And at that point, you're basically battling between the organization that you play for and the player, because one side is trying to get what they think they deserve, and the other's trying not to pay that salary and trying to get the best deal for themselves. And it does become tricky. It does become ugly. So expect the Yankees to try to come up with solutions for each and every one of these players. I doubt that they're all going to hit arbitration. There's a chance that some of them will. Possibly an Aaron Judge may, if the Yankees, you know, don't decide on his contract number. But overall, you have to look at these numbers and say, if you're the Yankees, Method A might be your best bet, but you're looking probably closer to Method B in regards to salary cap. If I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would say the Yankees end up paying around $30 to $35 million in arbitration. But I think that they'll get some deals here and there from guys that, you know, are willing to buy in. As long as they get their salary raised, they will probably buy in and help this Yankee team to allocate some funds elsewhere to help this team improve. Now, as we're talking about the non-tender deadline and arbitration, the guy that drew the most attention out of any Yankee is Gary Sanchez. People out there were speculating whether or not the Yankees were going to even tender him a contract, whether he's in the team's future plans. And at this point, I don't think you could clearly say that he is part of the team's plans. But I can tell you, and now that it's official, Gary Sanchez, the Yankees haven't necessarily given up on him to the point where they didn't think he was worth the contract. Gary just turned 28 on Wednesday, which was actually the non-tender deadline. Happy birthday, Gary. And you just don't give up on a guy that has two All-Star Game appearances and a Silver Slugger Award under his belt. To me, that just doesn't make much sense. They had two options with Gary. Yes, he's going to get an increase in arbitration. Most players do. And if you looked at the numbers from before, he's expected to make a little over $6 million, anywhere from $5.5 to $6 million, maybe even more so. But he's a guy that, if you don't tender him a contract, you have to worry about him signing with a division rival and figuring it out, maybe like a Tampa or a Boston on a cheaper deal, like a low-risk, high-reward type of deal. And then he torments you for a given set of time whenever he's there. Or you tender him a contract and you weigh your options from there. Let's face it, the catching market's not there. JT Realmuto is the biggest star, and they're saying his price tag is so high, most teams probably won't be in on him anyway. And then right under him is James McCann. McCann's a quality type of catcher, but how many teams are really going to dish out the money to bring him in? Somebody may take a chance on Gary and say, look, we'll call up Brian Cashman, try to get him, see what the deal is, and if the deal makes sense, we'll take a chance on him and move forward with him as our catcher. The things that scare me about Gary, and I'm going to be completely honest, defensively, he just doesn't impress me. I think that they've had so many people try to work with him and figure it out, and he's playing in the Dominican League now to try to work on his skills and try to get back on track. But I just feel as a defender, he's never going to be at that point where you could confidently say you want him behind the plate 9 innings a game. Yes, the arm strength is there, but the blocking ability and the mechanics behind the plate just are not there and haven't developed. And maybe another year with Tanner Swanson will help him, you know, in the second year with the same catching coordinator, but only time will tell. And the one thing about him offensively is when he connects, the guy hits the ball hard. According to Baseball Savant, and that's another great website if you're a baseball junkie like me, Gary is in the top percentage of exit velocity, hard hit percentage, and barrel percentage. For a team like the Yankees, obviously that's a great number because when he's putting the ball in play, he's hitting the ball hard. But the problem is the contact. The contact rate is not there. The guy tends to strike out a lot. He doesn't put the ball in play at all. And that's something that is an issue. 2020 was not his year. In a 60-game schedule, and you hear it all the time when you're watching these big-name brands talk about players and their years that they've come off of. 2020 is not a year to evaluate players. And they say certain players shouldn't be evaluated. I think that it's hard to evaluate anybody, unless you're DJ LeMahieu and you're an absolute stud and you have a monster year. So what I'm thinking the Yankees are going to do is they're going to explore every given opportunity or every kind of idea that comes across their mind. I don't think they're sold on Gary Sanchez being the catcher in 2021. I think it scares the daylights out of them that their ace, Garrett Cole, doesn't even want to pitch to him. He'd rather pitch to Kyle Higashioka. And I think that if the Yankees could find an upgrade and could find a trade suitor for Gary that meets what they're looking for, I think they wouldn't be afraid to pull the trigger. Now, for them to give up on him, I understand it. You know, he's had some struggles. And with the Yankees' current need, they need more guys to put the ball in play. And they need a defensive catcher who can handle a pitching staff and not make you worry late in games that he's not going to be able to stop the ball. Or the pass ball that he's going to let up is going to lead to a game-winning run. These are all things that have to be taken into consideration. Maybe he goes somewhere else and thrives. Maybe he figures it out in the Bronx and playing in the Winter League helps him tremendously. Who knows? And who knows what the Yankees' plans are with Gary Sanchez. But one thing's for sure. The guy's talented. Maybe there's a question about work ethic. Maybe there's a question about him possibly being lazy. Maybe he's just not built to be a catcher, especially in the Bronx, because you know the minute you mess up, the critics do come after you. And the minute you're not hitting, it makes the defensive woe stand out even more. But I think Gary Sanchez is a guy who could still be a quality catcher in this league. Heck, he's probably an all-star caliber player offensively still in this league. But it's a matter of whether or not he can get back on track. And the only time is going to tell with that. But I don't know what the Yankees are thinking. But if I'm a betting man, and I'm not, like I said before, I'm good at telling you that. I think that personally, the Yankees aren't totally giving up on Gary Sanchez. But if the right team calls and the right package is presented, Gary may have to look to rejuvenate his career elsewhere. Well, that's going to wrap up today's show. For those of you who are new to our channel, we thank you for checking us out. Hopefully, you come back for more. Check out our social media feeds and hit that subscribe button to get more information about our brand. If you're a returning member, we thank you for taking more time out of your busy schedule to talk some Yankees baseball with us. We're going to have some new shows coming up over the next week or so. Next show is going to talk about some non-tender candidates that may make sense for the Yankees in 2021. And also, we'll have a show that discusses some comments that Brian Cashman made on the future status of Aaron Boone. Once again, my name is Nick Delahanty, and this has been another episode of the Pinstripe Talk podcast powered by Delahanty Media. As always, let's go Yankees. We'll talk to you really soon.